Everybody, welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. Today we have Nick Campbell here, and who else we got over there?
You go.
Me?
I'm Chad Ashley.
And I'm Chris Schmidt.
Hey guys, what's up? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
This is a big week. We got Half Res coming this Wednesday in Chicago. I'm actually driving out tomorrow to come finally high-five you guys. It's been a while.
It's been a little bit, and it's going to be finally here. Half Res finally here. It's going to be a big one. It's going to be the biggest one. We have the most people signed up ever, the most prizes ever, the most everything ever.
Most ever.
Yep.
The most half-res ever. We have over 350 people signed up to be in Chicago, and we got friends of ours flying in from all over the states, I'm sure, and some of them are already in from across the pond, as they say. So Huge group of people coming in this year, a lot of people tweeting about it. So if you are in the Midwest at all, get your butt to half-res. It's going to be big. We have a blog post up on the site if you want to see kind of what we have planned this year. We announced all the speakers, so please go check that out. What else we got coming in Half Res, Chad?
It's Wednesday, too, so it's like literally blowing my mind that it's the day after tomorrow.
Yep. September 14th, if you're listening to this later.
And I was just working on my presentation last night. I think it's in a really good place. I'm excited about it. I hope everybody likes it. It's kind of sometimes I'll like put some jokes into my presentations, and I'm always afraid that they're going to like completely bomb.
I'll laugh. I'll be the one.
Yeah, you know what? Like, it's almost funnier if they bomb. So it's all good. So I'm just going to have fun with it, and it's my first time presenting at Half Res. And what's really weird is like last year's Half Res was the Half Res that I kind of, I had a little bit of a coming out party that night. I don't know if you remember that, but it was like I had just decided to switch to Cinema 4D.
Oh, that's right.
And remember that? And so like that was all like the buzz was like, Chad switching. Oh my God. It was like this huge thing, you know, people were freaking out. And then I found you guys and, you know, we were all high-fiving each other and you were very congratulatory. So this is kind of it's a cool thing for me to like go there. And like last year I was there as just like, just decided to do it for real. And now this year I feel like I've got a lot more of the software under my belt and I feel like a little bit more confident in it. And then ironically, my presentation, I'm not actually opening up the app at all, but that's okay. Cause I know that that's what's cool about Half-Res, that you guys have kind of like started this thing where it's like Half-Res is more about taking a bit of like looking at 3D or Cinema 4D from a bit of a skewed perspective and try to do something a little bit more creative and not just like a software demo. And I think that's really inspired me to kind of do the presentation that I have coming up.
Yeah, we're glad to have you in the Cinema 4D. I forgot about that. That was only a year ago, and you're doing Cinema 4D tutorials. Well, to everyone that doesn't know, Chad was one of the, I won't say haters, but you know, he was.
You can say it. It's fine.
All right. I'll say haters. He was a Cinema 4D hater, you know?
So
when it came out, you know, and Chad's been around, you know, in the industry for over 20 years now, right? So you've used all this software. You've seen it all grow. And when a lot of people were jumping into Cinema 4D, probably rightly so, you're like, well, it's not as robust as all this other stuff that you knew and had, you know, experience with. But as Cinema 4D became more and more like capable and you could use it in Teams, yeah, and all these other renderers starting to pop up, Chad, I saw it, started raising his eye a little bit, like a little in the corner. Dude. And when he finally took the jump, I remember he came up to me, he's like, okay, don't yell at me and don't make fun of me, but I think I'm switching to Cinema 4D. And I said, I think I remember exactly what I said. I said, I'll make fun of you later about this, but for right now, I'm just glad that you're here. And I gave him a big hug.
That's exactly what it was, man. Like, and here's the thing, like, I've never been the guy who's like too proud to be like admit that I'm wrong. You know, I'm always, if you know me, I'm a bit of a flip-flopper. Like, I will constantly like go back and forth on stuff. So that's why I could never be in politics, I guess. But so, yeah, so you're absolutely right. I was a big hater, you know, not, I wouldn't say hater is probably the wrong word. I just didn't, really respect it fully. And that was because I didn't really know much about it other than what I had seen on the internet. And, you know, and that wasn't much, to be honest. And then I think it was like 16 or 17 came out. I think that's what it was. Was it? Yeah, it was probably about 17 when I first started looking at the application. And so when 17 came out and like third party rendering happened with it and like all this other stuff, and I was like, all right. And the 3DS Max world that I was in was like going downhill fast in terms of user amount of users in town, freelancers, whatnot. And it was just kind of like a moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to try it and see what happens. And I opened it up and I started messing around with it. And I was like, wow, this is insane. Like, I had no idea that it was this deep of an app. And, you know, I've used Maya, I've used XSI, I used 3ds Max. They all have their strengths and they all are good in their own ways. But I think Cinema was probably the first program that I ever opened up that I was like, okay, it makes sense, number one. Number two, it doesn't look like shit. So it's like a well-designed UI. And number three is like, I feel like there's not much I couldn't figure out, whether I have to do it on my own, like just like looking through the manual, or diving into the one of many tutorials that you two guys have made over the past 5 years. So with that kind of resources and that arsenal of information at your fingertips, I was like, yeah, this is definitely a good app.
Dude, we're so excited, man.
Yep.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, man. I mean, you guys, like, I'm stoked, and like Half-Res is going to be awesome. I can't wait to see Chris's presentation. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris,
Chad, don't be nervous for your presentation. I think Half-Res is the one conference where we encourage our speakers to be drinking beforehand.
In that case,
it's definitely very fun. It's not dry technical training at Half-Res for sure.
All right. I'll be sure to be completely wasted.
No, I was at my first presentation. That's because the first year I had to be the last speaker and everybody else went long. So that was exciting the first year.
Oh, yeah, so that's right. I remember it was like, it was almost like cartoon hiccups coming out of you.
When I have never, now, Chris, I've only known you for like maybe a year or 2 years, and like I've seen you drunk a couple times.
It only happens once or twice a year, really.
Yeah, I know. And like, it is the most surreal thing to see Chris inebriated. It really is, because he's like this completely, you know that, you probably don't remember this movie, but there was a movie with, what's the dude that did all the telethons?
Lewis?
Jerry Lewis had that movie where like it was he was like a kind of a professory, very sciencey guy, and then like something happened to him and he'd come up and he'd be like this like suave guy, like all relaxed, and like, and that was Chris, man. Like Chris, he was like putting his arm around people and just like it was amazing. I hope to see that Chris on Wednesday.
Oh, that's almost guaranteed. But see, I only drink at like these special events. I don't drink during the week at all. I don't drink during the month. I drink like once every month or two. And that's it.
Hey, man.
If I'm going to drink, you might as well get drunk.
true.
So, Chris, do you have a teaser about your presentation at all?
I'm going to keep mine intentionally vague, but it's going to be a little trip through memory lane. And it's always my goal. I make tutorials all year, and I talk about Cinema 4D all year. So it's always my goal at Half-Res to do some sort of something absurd with Cinema. Like the first year was like a flight simulator where you could actually control it flying around. And then we did the using Twitter in Cinema 4D for the live event, and you know, stuff like making the video game in it, like just being goofy. Like I want to be goofy in Cinema 4D, essentially something completely impractical. So it's definitely in line with that.
Awesome. Okay. That's awesome. What I love. I love that.
The video game. Oh, I forgot about that. That was
the video
amazing.
Game was super fun. We gotta reprise that 1 year.
Yeah. Chris and his brothers made, a Cinema 4D video game that was live in the viewport, and it worked with, was it Xbox controllers,
yep,
or
Xbox
PlayStation
controllers plugged right into a PC.
Cinema Smash.
Half-Res Cinema Smash.
Yeah, and you could like knock each other off It was based on Super Smash Brothers, right?
Yep, vaguely. Yeah, that was the inspiration.
And you could kind of knock people off the edge, and it was all dynamic, and it was really amazing what you guys pulled off. And then, yeah, it just disappeared. We got to bring that back.
I think that might have been the first Half-Res I ever went to, and I saw that.
That was up at...
And it blew my mind. I was like, wait a minute, what are they doing here? And, you know, somebody explained it to me, and like, dude, like, first of all, to try to even accomplish anything close to that in 3DS Max, I mean, you just can't do it. So I was just like, wait, is this like a game engine? Like, how is he doing this right here? Because it blew my mind.
It's all coded.
It's crazy.
Well, I'm excited. We also have Eric and Nick from Run Kick Shout doing a presentation about their journey from to start their own design studio. So that'll be really fun. And then, we have Beeple coming on stage.
Beeple! We've been trying to get him out since, like, the first one. He's elusive.
I'm so excited.
He's like a mystical creature. He's like a dragon or a unicorn or something that we've been trying to drag out.
Trying to Pokemon capture
him. He's like a liger. He's like this weird animal.
I'm really like still, I've never met him. I've talked to him a couple times. I'm really excited to get on stage, ask him some questions. So if any of you out there listening have some Beeple questions, hop on Twitter, use the hashtag #HalfRez and say, hey, Beeple, question, and ask away, because we're compiling a list of good questions. You know, stuff that he may not have been asked before, you know, and trying to really dig on how he stays so prolific, really. I still don't. It's like every day more beautiful stuff comes out.
Yep.
I want to know. Like, I want to nerd out and be like, okay, do you stockpile? Do you like just have like 3 days where you are just like in the zone and you just stockpile a bunch of stuff? Do you have like a kit bash of like parts that you just throw together? Do you? You know what I mean? Like, how are you? Because it's like human. I don't understand how it's possible, dude, to do what he's doing. Like,
hit hashtag it, bro.
Get going. I'll just yell it out. From the
anybody have a question? Drunk Chad. I have a question.
Wait a minute.
We have a lot of fun stuff. Still surprises come in. Our sponsors are incredible this year. We got some a Luster booth, which will be really fun for those of you who show up and use Instagram. That'll be really fun. We have a ton of prizes.
So many prizes.
Oh my gosh. So this phone call actually happens, or this podcast actually is recorded right after our like Monday phone call to kind of catch up on everything Grayscale Gorilla internally. And the prizes list was just announced. It was over 30 prizes from all of our different sponsors. So that'll be really fun to give away. I know, isn't that bonkers?
Dude, it's ridiculous. And it's like software, everything from like, well, what can we say? Can we say anything, or are we not going to say anything?
Oh, do it, man. Let's go. Right, it's only so 2 days away.
Okay, so there's, like, this blows my mind. Like, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but X Particles we're going to be giving away.
Yep.
Right? So that's major. That's big. We're giving away our own software.
Yep.
Quite a few versions of things. So software galore. We got tons of great sponsors. Not only that, but we have T-shirts, pins. We've got koozies, right?
Oh yeah,
we've got the special cubes. Those are specialty items.
We've got like Pixar does the. I don't have mine.
Oh, the teapots.
Yeah, Pixar has the teapots. We've got the cubes.
Yep.
So you got to get this year's cube.
Yep.
And then skateboards. Don't ask why, but they're cool. And they say
look
half
really
on them,
cool.
And they're
really
hand cool. They're hand screened, so it's pretty ridiculous the amount of prizes. Like
Barton better get one of those, man.
I'm excited, man. Like I feel like that's if you don't come for any other reason, come to win some prizes.
To win a skateboard.
Well, that's 30 prizes that are all software, and then beyond that we have T-shirts and skateboards,
dude,
tubes,
it's ridiculous.
And pins. So yeah, there's a lot this year.
So, it'll be fun.
Yeah, get there. Get a. I don't know how the we're doing raffle tickets, right? Is that how this works?
There's like four different ways of winning things.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to win.
You have to be there in person for all of them, but there's gonna be raffle tickets, and then we have the find. My favorite thing we came up with it last year. We make these finder cubes, so we take these cubes and we hide them around the venue, And then you, if, as you find them through the night, you can find them, and then you bring them up to us, and you get a prize from that. And this year we made sure to make more, so you get to keep the cube this year, because they're cute little cubes that we print the logo all over. Last year they were 3D printed. This year we have 3D printed and laser cut. And everybody was like, "Oh, I want that prize, but I want to keep the cube too." And we're like, "No, sorry, you got to pick one or the other, because we have to rehide this cube." So we're making more cubes this year.
So you keep it.
And then we have the we're gonna have the raffle, and we're going to have. Yeah, Nick always does a thing where he like asks questions of the audience, like who traveled the furthest or some cinema trivia or something like that. And then we have every year we have the cube races where we have the little cubes with a little bit of AI in them. So they hop and try and do this race, and then we divide the room up and we kind of shrink it and shrink it and shrink it. I think last year Loose Keys won everything.
Right. We make the two groups actually fight.
Oh, yeah. The final one is we give them like big foam cubes and they battle each other.
Sumo suits next year.
I just came up with a prize idea. Nick, you should get an old pair of your glasses and give them away. I think that would be hilarious.
We got glasses and a beard combo. We could just walk around.
Well, you know how they did like the like when Harry Potter was in the theater? They had the special Harry Potter 3D glasses. We can get Nick glasses printed up like with to work in the movie theater with 3D projection.
Yes, and they should have like the beard attached.
Oh my God, yeah. Everybody can be a gorilla.
Oh my gosh. All right, let's move on, folks. So, Chad, you're talking about moving to Cinema 4D reminds me of maybe we could talk today about how we got into 3D and motion design and all this stuff to begin with. What was that? I think everyone has their like intro story of that spark when they were younger that set them off on this path to learn all this stuff about motion design, 3D, And really, I don't know if I know everyone's story specifically, so maybe we could talk a little bit about that today. Chris or Chad, you guys have
go ahead, Chris. You can go first.
Oh, I'm going to start it? Okay. I know mine very precisely. It worked out very specifically, where this is back in the late 90s, maybe mid to late 90s. Like, I'm in high school, and there's two different Saturday morning shows. One was Reboot. And the other was Beast Wars. And I loved those two shows. They were amazing. Those were both made by the same company called Mainframe Entertainment. They're a Canadian company. Yeah. And Reboot was the first entirely computer-generated imagery for a TV show. And it all took place like inside the computer. And like it was so old and so simple that by watching the show – I feel like I gained an intuitive kind of knowledge of the way 3D must work. Like, I'm in high school. I have no idea the way this stuff works. I don't know what the software looks like. I've never sat behind anything like it. I don't even know what Photoshop is at this point. But I was watching this stuff, and so me and a friend went to a college fair, and I didn't know what I wanted to do at all, and he didn't know what he wanted to do. He was talking about maybe going to some sort of like biology something maybe and walking around, and he goes, what do you want to do? What do you want to go to school for? And in that moment, I go, computer animation, like right in that moment. And it just sounded so perfect. And from that moment forward, that was the only thing I knew I wanted to do. And it was entirely because of those two shows. And he goes, that's a really good idea. And so for the rest of the college fair, we're just walking around, only looking at schools that were offering some sort of computer animation. So that's where I wanted to start out there. Now, I ended up going to a community college for a couple years, very locally, and I super lucked out. There's this awesome teacher/administrator named Mike Maddox, and hopefully he'll be at Half-Res this year. But he had a couple students who had been saying they want to do 3D, and it was actually before I was there. So I'm supposed to take a Photoshop class, but he goes, okay, you're supposed to take Photoshop, but in parallel, I also want you to take this 3D class I'm trying to get off the ground. And I was immediately like, oh my God, yes, like, let's make this happen. And he said, we don't have an official teacher. There's some people who want it. It's experimental. So, and I think if I'm remembering, he's like, I'm going to come and bring a box of donuts and say, you guys go nuts. And that could not have been a better learning environment for me. So we have an entire, like, at this, it's the fourth story of the school. It's an entirely enclosed off room. So there's like no windows to the outside. And we just have like 30 Macs in the room, and we have Cinema 4D version 6. And it would start. He said, here's the box of the donuts. Learn it on your own. And like me, it was me and then one other guy. We're just going nuts with it. But just based on my transportation needs, I was stuck at the school pretty much from the early morning until late at night. But that didn't bother me at all because I was literally on top of schoolwork. I must have been spending at least 40 hours a week in the computer lab sitting behind Cinema 4D, like version 6 and then version 7 and then version 8 while I was there, just playing with 3D more and more and more, just obsessively. Like, and, you know, like I didn't, you know, render farm stuff. We weren't tinkering around with that too much. But I would sit behind one machine. It's like, okay, and this one, I've got this springy thing going. We're going to do that. Okay, start rendering. I'd move to the next machine. Okay, let's experiment with dynamics. Okay, cool. Move on to this one. That's rendering. Let's do thinking particles over here. I would have like up to 4 different machines rendering different projects. I'd be working on them all simultaneously. Honestly,
I just imagine some sad person behind you that wants their turn, and you're like not letting them on the computer.
We used to steal like RAM from machines. That's back when we're back, you know, it's like 125, you know, sticks of RAM, megs of RAM, and we would steal them from the machines and make a super machine, and we got one machine up to like a gig of RAM. It's like, oh my god, it's the most powerful machine ever. That's back in the day when you would constantly hit the out of memory issues. So man, I just was absolutely obsessed with it. And I gotta say, all the stuff that I kind of intuited from watching Reboot and Beast Wars. Beast Wars was a Transformers cartoon where they would transform into animals. But man, like you go back and look at them and they're not very good. But man, I still love both of those cartoons. But the stuff that it was like, here's how I think it's going to work. It all worked exactly like that. Like what I thought it would be.
What was your concept of that? Like, how did you visualize that before opening Cinema 4D or knowing the package? Like, how did you, what was your mental model for that before you opened Cinema?
It's hard to picture it. I mean, it's like trying to picture what Photoshop would be like, not knowing anything about Photoshop, where it's like, well, there must be some sort of brush, some sort of canvas. So in 3D, it's like, okay, well, you must be able to model something, and then you're going to, like, you know, like I didn't know what a timeline was at the time, but it's like, okay, you got to be able to record a position of the thing and then change the time and record the time again. So just, you know, I had no structure in my head whatsoever what it might be, and it all just was pretty much exactly what I would expect it to be. And yeah, just obsessing over it. In fact, we'll put a link in the show notes, but I did a podcast with Loose Keys. They do a podcast called Toon Talk Weekly. And we did an entire podcast about Reboot. And they were going to, they'd actually said, hey, I was like, oh, what are you doing this week? And they're like, oh, you know, we're going to do this crappy old TV show, like, you know, this crappy old thing called Reboot. And I was like, Reboot? I was like, oh my God, they got to be on the show. Like, and I was obsessed. And both of them even said, Jake has said that's one of his favorite episodes they did because they were kind of going into it like, oh, look at this old cheesy show. And like, it's all these, you know, just kind of ripping it apart. And I came in it with such enthusiasm and knowing so much about it. And that completely transformed my life and everything I do where they're like, wow, this is really something. So there's an entire podcast of that we'll link to.
Oh, that's nice.
That's amazing.
Those two shows are, if you go into it with the right frame of mind, they're so good. What's great is you can watch those two TV shows improve over time. Like the writing improves, the voice acting improves, and the CG dramatically improves. Like you can see between seasons, they could suddenly do soft shadows. Like before, from one season, they couldn't do soft shadows. The one after, they could. Like first season, literally no shadows. Like they couldn't render them or they couldn't process them. They start getting more particle effects. You can see them improve as they go. And that's so amazing to me. Like it's so much fun.
Did they use what program did they use?
Fairly certain there's some version of Maya, but I don't know for sure.
I'm just looking at the wiki of Reboot right now.
I have a question about, so you're in this lab and the teacher says go nuts. How did you start to approach learning all this stuff? Did they have the manual built in like they do now, or did they have the paper manual?
They had the paper books, which I guess back then in version 6, it was like a book. And then after version 6, they start coming out with like the hair module and then, you know, and then thinking particles and then pyrocluster in it. And each one became another manual. So the book started, it was like this thick and it started getting that thick and then that thick and that thick. I was doing that with Cinema and then going back to the story, I would obsess with that in the lab. And then after I graduated from the school, I was immediately hired to begin teaching it just because I had spent all of my time doing it. So I did that. I did that for a while.
That's how it was back then. If anybody that knew anything about that stuff was like instantly hired.
Yeah.
Like either as a teacher or in production. So, I remember that happening several times.
So super fun. I loved it.
Those did they
good
have
old
the,
simple
uh,
days.
Did they have any video training back then at all that came with it?
Oh, no. This is the era when the internet was just starting to get like a QuickTime video on it. Like, I remember like the Animatrix was coming out towards, you know, after 2 years, like the Animatrix coming out, and we would let this little like 5 meg video pre-buffer for like an hour, and everybody gather around to watch like this animation online. It was amazing. So I think there was like the books, and then there was like a quick start PDF, and that's all that you had to go off of training. So it was just me sitting there like tinkering with everything, learning every little detail I could.
That's amazing.
That's crazy.
That's the best feeling in the world.
Having said that, though, I'm trying to get better, but like I have a very good technical background now, just because I spent so much dang time between, you know, behind the software. But I didn't get the kind of fundamental design background. I had a lot of classes along those lines, but I didn't engage it in the same way. So like where you guys are like, oh, you have to know design, I get to fill a very specific niche where I'm super technical. I'm so technical that I can kind of answer any question. But as a general rule, as a career path, that's a dangerous way to go, is being locked into a piece of software. But that's what I've done. It's worked out so far. But I don't recommend it too much to other people, because you have to spend 40 plus hours just sitting behind the software.
People are really like, if you're into it, you're into it. You know, like you can't. Yep. It's always good to have like a peripheral knowledge of what's going on in like terms of animation or design. But if you have a true technical, if you have a true like love and passion for the technical aspect about the software, that's awesome, man. Like, that's called a technical director. Like, people pay good money for those types of people.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been just to have you next to me as I'm learning all this stuff too. It's invaluable. But also, your design stuff's really been stepping up lately. So it's been really cool to see your Instagram renders come through, and you could tell it's. We're rubbing off on you as well as all your technical stuff has been helping me out, or us out.
Oh, thanks, fellas.
We're always rubbing off on each other.
That's what we do.
At one point, a tutorial idea, I know we're on a specific topic here, but a tutorial idea I would love to see sometime is, and I guess I've learned a lot of Nick's, but getting this out for everybody, where it's like, okay, you do your render, and now what is your go-to goodie bag in Photoshop of doing your post-processing? Because every time I do my daily render, it's like, okay, here's, you know, a little bit of vignette, like a curve, like all the different things you combine. Seeing everybody's little go-to bag there would be kind of fun. You know, I'd love to see, like, Beeples. That would be amazing.
That'll be a good question.
Yeah, well, that is a good one.
Well, like, we have to put them behind Photoshop or After Effects and do something.
I mean, I want to, for Beeple, kind of sidetracking back to the Beeple thing for a minute, like, I am curious. I'm about as curious about his creative process, although I know exactly who his influences are. But I really want to know more about, like, when he gets up in the morning, what's the routine? You know, like, how does that happen? Is it
take us through a day?
Yeah, exactly. Just take me through the day. Like, you know, is it different every day? Is it the same? Like, I'm just really curious. Only because now the work is really, really good, and that's, you know, awesome, but it's the consistency that blows my mind. It's just like, it's not like, you know, every other week there's one that knocks it out of the park. I mean, he's like literally doing crazy sci-fi concept art like every day.
It's all right. It's added to the questions list. It's anyway. Going in. So Chad, what's your history on all this stuff? How did you, I think we talked a little bit about it actually. If anyone's wants a, the first interview we did with Chad Ashley is actually part of the podcast. If you go back a few episodes, and I know we get a little bit into your past, but what was your initial, kind of, love for all this stuff, 3D and design? And
I actually hated 3D when I started in this business. No, not in the business. It was before the business. I was an animation student doing traditional animation at Columbia College, and I didn't like 3D. I thought it was really stiff. I thought it was lifeless. I thought it was gross and like, yeah, 3D, you know? And because I was like this traditional animator guy who like thought traditional animation was the best thing ever. And so I went through my entire college career, maybe have taken two 3D classes, and I didn't really enjoy it because I felt at that time it was like trying to walk or run through quicksand up to your neck. It was like you couldn't really do anything as fast as I could draw it. And so I just got really frustrated and I didn't like it. And so when I graduated, I'm like, I'm going to be a traditional animator. I'm going to go work at Disney, or I'm going to go work at that time, Don Bluth or something like that. And I graduated and I couldn't find a job right away. There wasn't, you know, as you would imagine, this is the mid 90s. There wasn't a lot going on in traditional animation in Chicago. But there was one company that was looking for people to help out with a CD-ROM game, if you remember those. But it was like a choose-your-own-adventure kind of a thing. It was like a Hansel and Gretel thing. I'll never forget it. But they were in Schaumburg, which is a suburb of Chicago. And I lived in another suburb of Chicago. So I was like, oh, this is perfect. I'll go and apply for this job. So I go there with my portfolio. And at Columbia, I had really kind of... I went in, you know, head first into animation. I was a TA for a number of years, good friends with the head of the animation department. Had a lot of friends that we were all into animation together. And so I had, you know, a lot of confidence. I thought, okay, I'm going to get a job. This is not going to be a problem. And I walk in there and they're like, okay, sit down. We're going to have you do a pencil test. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm taking it home, right? And they're like, no, you're gonna sit here, and our animation supervisor is gonna give you two keyframes, and you're gonna tween them out. And here's the dope sheet, and here's what we want, and go do it. And I just was like crapping my pants, dude. Like I was like, never, like, you know, you're put on the spot like that, and you're just a kid right out of college. And there's like all around me are these amazing people like drawing on animation, those big animation desks. And like they're all like busting it out, like just flipping with their fingers. And like everybody's just like, and I'm like super intimidated. And I sit down and I start tweening this out. And for those of you that don't know what that is, so in traditional animation, the keyframe animators, the guys that are higher up in the food chain, they don't do all of the tweening. They just do the keyframes, and that's where that word comes from. So they're doing the key poses of the scene, and then they block out the time in which these key poses are going to take place, and they mark them with little checks, and they give you like a little frame number. Like he's got to hit this pose by the 60th frame and this pose by the 300th frame or whatever. And so the job for the lower people on the totem pole is to tween them out, which means you have to draw all the drawings in between those keyframes. You have to keep the character's shape. You have to keep the character's, you know, key features. It can't, your line quality has to be great. So anyway, all these things. So I do my tweens. I turn them in, and I go back and I sit down, and they're like, all right, you know, we're going to have our animation supervisor look at him, and then he'll call you in. So he looks at them and he calls me in, and I'm thinking, I nailed it. I got this. And he's like, listen, I got some bad news. And I'm like, what's up? And he's like, you have a good sense of timing, and I can tell you know how to animate, but your line quality is shit. And I'm like, well, okay, you know, can I work on that? What can I do to improve that? He's like, well, the bad news is, like, there's not much you can do to improve your line quality. Either you kind of have it or you don't, and you don't. And so in an afternoon, 4 years of what I thought my life was going to be just came crashing to the ground. And on the drive home, I was just like stunned, like just like I'd been hit across the head with something, because I just literally knew what my life was going to be, and then I didn't. And so I was driving home, and I was like, what the hell am I going to do with my life? Like, I literally just spent 4 years of my life trying to make this work, and I don't have it. Like, they couldn't have told me that like 3 years ago. Like, I was like, what the hell, man? So I literally went into this like crazy downward spiral where I didn't know what the hell I was going to do with my life. And I kept in touch with Barry Young. Thank God. Barry Young saved my life, I swear to God, because I didn't know what I was going to do. And I took this really shitty job at a pharmaceutical company that needed they wanted an illustrator on staff to draw stuff for their medical slides. And I fit the bill because I could draw and I was cheap. So I was doing this horrible, horrible job, sucked. It was the worst job ever. And I thought, that's, you know, this is my lot in life. I'm, you know, going to be doing this the rest of my life. This is great. And I was really depressed and down and sucked. Until one day, Barry Young called me and he said, hey, I know you don't like where you're at now. I know you still want to do animation. I know you don't like computer animation, but I have a friend who's starting a computer animation studio up in Milwaukee, and he's looking for animators, not computer animators, because he wants to kind of follow the Pixar route and just like hire people that are, you know, teach them the computer stuff and hire them for their core knowledge. And I'm like, at this point, dude, I will take anything. Like, I didn't even care. I didn't even care. So I was like, absolutely, computer animation, love it. It's the best thing ever. And so I drive up to Milwaukee, and I do the interview with Andy Flessis at Cybertoons. I'll never forget. And I kind of vibed with him because he was kind of this punk rock skater. I was this punk rock skater. And we all hit it off, and he was starting this like little fledgling computer animation studio in Milwaukee, and I just thought that was really cool. And I'm like, this is it. I'm going to finally be able to move out of my parents' place. I had just, you know, I was trying to figure out what to do. My then-girlfriend, now wife, we didn't know what to do. So we ended up moving. I ended up getting the job at Cybertoons, and I was making like no money there at all. Like literally, we had no money. And like, I remember we moved into this one bedroom and we went to the, we would go to the grocery store with a calculator, and we would walk up and down the aisles with a calculator and see what we could afford to eat that week. And 'cause I was making no money, dude. Like, but here's the thing. That whole experience gave me a perspective that I don't think I would have had otherwise. And I actually fell in love with 3D over that 6 month, 7 month period when I was so thankful to be doing anything creative professionally that scratched that itch that I had of filmmaking, of animation, of design. And so I would bring those manuals home, Chris, like you had, like they were boxes of manuals, like volumes, and I would bring them home and read them like novels, and I would just sit there and every day go in, stay as late as I could, come in on weekends, learn. And I repeated this for a year until I got to a point where I knew the software well enough, where I knew I could kind of expand my skill set as just an animator. And then I kind of expanded into rendering and modeling and all that stuff. But I started there as just like an animator. Like literally my job was somebody would hand me the scene to animate, and that's what I would do. So yeah, I it's kind of a weird long story, but it kind of saved 3D. Like I fell in love with it and I can't imagine myself doing anything else. And, I did a lot of live action too throughout the years, and I like live action, but it's just can't compare to the ability to kind of take what's in your head and like put it out onto a screen with like very little in between.
What was it about, what did you discover about 3D in that process that made you like not
hate it?
Yeah.
I think I saw its potential. Like I never saw its potential before until I worked with people that really knew their shit. And like, it was that moment when I saw these other guys and like, so the guys that were at Cybertoons with me, I don't know if he was ever actually at Cybertoons, but John Tojek, the guy that shoots a lot of our HDRIs, he was friends with Andy Flessis, and he, I think maybe worked with him a bit at that time. And he's an extremely talented 3D artist. Then you had Dave Allen, who was another 3D artist at Cybertoons at the time, who then now has gone on to DreamWorks and PDI. And like, I don't even know where he is now. He's probably like way up in some film studio. Then you had Scott Sigelski, who left and worked at DreamWorks, Sony. He might still be at DreamWorks, actually. So we had this like insanely talented crew that went on to do like mind-blowing stuff. Like Dave Allen, I don't know if you guys remember, it was a big deal back in the early thousands. It was the first traditional animation film that DreamWorks put out. I think it was about a pharaoh or something. Like it was about Egypt.
Prince of Egypt, yeah.
Yep, that's it. And there's a sequence in there where he parts the Red Sea. And Dave, this guy that I worked with, was like the guy who figured out how to do that effect.
Oh, that's cool.
So like I kind of got my crash course in the industry from these guys that were like super really good at what they do. And I think that's what kind of turned me onto it. And then once I saw the potential of if you put the tool in the right hand, in the hands of the right people, then it can be anything you want it to be. It can be an extension of your creativity. And like that potential just like blew my mind. And I was like, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
That's amazing. And what year was that? Like what was the current status of 3D? Was it like checkerboards and stuff? Like when you were looking at it, it through the eyes of quicksand up to your neck, like what?
I was in school at Columbia. Nobody knew really how to use this stuff. Just, you know, very similar to Chris's situation. They had the software, they had the machine, and you were kind of taught features, and you were taught this does this and this does that, and by next week you should have a bouncing ball. And I was just kind of like, this is lame, man. Like, it doesn't look good. It doesn't, like, it's not exciting to me. And honestly, it kind of parallels my feelings about, you know, when I went to from Max to Cinema. I looked down upon it with a little bit of, like, you know, snobbiness almost, and like, oh, you know, CG, you know what I mean? It looks terrible. And then, you know, seeing really talented artists use the tool, it just inspired me. But yeah, I think the level back then was probably a lot of like Fong shaded bouncy balls and checkerboard floors and horrible reflections, and you couldn't render anything out of quality because you only had one machine and somebody else needed to use it. So if you were going to render anything, it was going to be like really small, or it was going to take all weekend, and then it probably crashed, and it was all on Unix. So you had to understand how to do Unix commands and basically, you know, set up renders using Unix commands. And that really intimidated the hell out of me, because I didn't know that stuff in college. It wasn't until after college, when I got the job at Cybertunes, that I had to learn how to use Unix. And I barely learned. I learned enough to like do what I needed to do, only because it is like really intimidating for a kid, you know, in 1995 to sit in front of a Unix shell and like have no idea what these commands are. Somebody just tells you, oh yeah, just type CD space / you know, da da da. And I'm like, what does that even do? So yeah,
you think you're gonna break the whole system,
and you can, dude. Right?
Oh, you totally
the
can.
Wrong, and the that, wrong command, dude, put a question mark or something. You erased hard drive.
I'm gonna tell a story at my presentation. I got some stories for my presentation at Half-Res that you're gonna want to check out, because you're just gonna be like, that doesn't sound like it would even happen. Like, how did that happen? Because it's such a different world now, and that's really kind of my whole talk is kind of like where we were, where we are, where we could go, and where we were not that long ago. Chris, it was like, what, 2000? What year?
I was 2000.
Yeah. 2000. So I was just before that, and like the shit that's different now compared to then is insane. It's insane.
Well, I have a similar kind of didn't initially like 3D kind of situation that you did, Chad. It was... even though looking back on it, I should have. It was originally like, I think like a lot of my age kids, it was like Jurassic Park and Terminator 2. And that those movies, not only because of the special effects, but because of the rise of like behind the scenes footage and like, you know, Entertainment Tonight or whatever the heck, like kind of show put on these behind the scenes things. It never dawned on me that there were like people behind making this stuff, you know. It was movie magic to me until they show like the cameras and the computers and all this stuff, and I was like, wow, okay, this is a job. Well, and then when your parents start asking you when you're 12, like, what do you want to do when you grow up, you're like, I don't know, like be a, like do magic tricks, and they're like, yeah, that's not really.
They're like, ooh, maybe we should worry about this kid.
Yeah, they were worried. And you know, I'm like, you know, professional musician, they're like, oh gosh, wrong direction. What are we going to do with this guy?
Backup plan, baseball player.
So they found out that somebody on the lake, we lived on a small lake in Michigan, friends of theirs, their son worked at ILM and worked on Terminator 2. And when he was home, they actually brought me over, like, this is how great my parents
That's
were.
That's amazing.
They set up an interview with him and sat me down in front of him to like ask questions about how you make Terminator 2. And so he's telling me about computer animation and all this stuff and how it works. And I kind of forget my silly questions, but it was really helpful. It was really, really interesting, but I got the vibe of it that it was so – that it was extra, extra technical. It was a lot of sitting in front of a computer, which I loved computers at the time, but it was very technical even hearing him talk about it. Because I think he came – and he still is – in the world of like somebody else created this concept and it was really up to him to implement it. And that to me, I was like, okay, I see. There's a huge structure here. So, you know, I grew up – I had a million other ideas of what I wanted to do, but then I saw, and I've told this story a lot, so I'll keep it short, but then I saw MK12 on television around 2001, I think it was, and it was on this network called the Burly Bear Network. And all the Burly Bear Network was what would have been like infomercial time. Like anybody else would have just purchased this time in the middle of the night to play infomercials.
Like public access.
Yeah, almost like public access, but literally, like, instead of selling like shake weights and blenders, this company or guy or whatever it was decided to buy out that commercial advertising space and just run cartoons and cool 3D things and stuff, like little skits. It was pre-YouTube, right? It was like everything you would see on a cool YouTube show or like on Cartoon Network maybe late night. This was, I think, actually the same year Adult Swim started. So like that kind of stuff. They would just play weird cartoons. And one of them was MK12, Man of Action. And it played and I was like so blown away by the quality of this thing. And not just the quality, but it wasn't traditional hand-drawn animation and it wasn't, 3D Pixar animation. It was this weird blend of everything. And I describe it now as like an animated band poster. You know, it was this really over-designed, beautiful, snarky, fun thing with awesome music too, right? And that initially got me into this, you know, got me into After Effects, playing around with this, but it, still 3D was very, like you said, Chad, everything I saw of 3D was aliens and spaceships and lizards and checkerboards and I don't know. It just wasn't my language. I wanted Man of Action, right? I wanted like, which has spaceships, but very cool retro spaceships.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I think he's in outer space.
Yeah. Yeah. I like 60s bachelor pad spaceships, not the futuristic ones with lizards in them. So anyway, all the 3D stuff that they taught at my school was I think it was Maya. And it was every time I sat down behind it, it just didn't speak to me. And finally, Cinema 4D came along and, you know, I'll cut the story a little short because I tell this a lot. But once I saw Cinema and how it integrated with After Effects, which I already knew a ton of, it all started to come full circle. In fact, I remember, Chad, when Chad and I used to work together at a place called Avenue Edit in Somersault.
Yeah.
And one of the things I tried to do, I remember early on with Cinema 4D, was render out a QuickTime VR of my 3D objects.
I remember that.
And then I wrote a script in After Effects that would recognize what angle the camera was aiming at my model and then display that frame of the QuickTime VR. And the idea was that I couldn't animate, I couldn't barely do anything in 3D, but I wanted to bring a model in, render it from every potential angle in the world, and then import that into After Effects, and then use traditional cameras in After Effects to then display this. So I thought in my head, if I could just render every possible angle of a car, bring it into After Effects, and then move my camera around it, it'll be just like it's in there. It'll be just like it's native. Well, quickly, I ran into some bottlenecks of...
I remember thinking you were crazy.
Yeah, well, I was crazy. Still, I'm crazy. What I didn't think of is you couldn't get the resolution of the angles down small enough to not see you like chattering along the side of a car. It'll work if you spin it fast, but if you try to do a real subtle little move, the car will actually like go pop, pop, and shift around.
I remember your demo reel showing up on our desk when I worked at Optimus, and it was like, I think it was called like Creamy Orange or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we literally, when that reel came in, we all were like, you guys got to come in here and see this reel, see what this guy's doing with After Effects, because it's insane. And we looked at your reel and we were like, because it was kind of like at that point in time, that MK12 stuff, that look was like super popular, but very few people really kind of understood how to make it, you know? So yeah. There's people that could appreciate it, but then there was people that not very many people understood how to actually execute it. And here was this kid who was right out of college showing up with this reel that was really so well done in that style that we all were just like, we got to hire this guy like tomorrow. And you had already accepted the job at Somersault, I think. Yep. And I had just accepted the job at Somersault and realized that you were going to be there. So I was so stoked. I'm like, man, I'm going to where this guy is. That's got to be good, right? And when I got there, it was such a cool experience. You weren't there for very long, but just having you there and just like starting to build that little department up into what it became even after you left, when we brought Amador on and Mark Terrio and we just had like this great little vibe going. And I totally remember those days, man. Like I also remember you, have this distinct memory in my head of you playing the Peanuts Christmas album on repeat pretty much the entire month of December.
Oh yeah,
dude! If you're gonna play Christmas music, that is the most of that. That is the best Christmas music,
and
yeah, by far.
I just thought, like, wow, this guy's really eccentric. You know, like he's bringing a record player to his office, and he's playing,
oh yeah, I brought my record player
playing records and shit. And there's like literally like nobody there. It was like maybe you and me, like and that was the whole floor was like practically empty.
Oh yeah, I was blasting some Peanuts, man, or some Vince Guaraldi. It was loud.
Yeah, it was crazy, and those are fun times. Those are good times.
Well, that, you know, to get to that level of 3D was always by accident that I played around with all this cinema stuff, and it was actually being around Chad that helped kind of further my design side of things, because I didn't understand any of that stuff. I saw Cinema 4D as an After Effects plugin, really. Hmm. It was the thing that would allow me to bring 3D elements into After Effects. So if back when I made roller coasters and like Ferris wheels out of After Effects planes, I realized that somebody explained to me that what I was doing in After Effects was modeling polygon by polygon.
Yeah, that might have been me.
That might have been you just saying
just
that.
Just use 3D, dude. What are you doing?
Yeah, and you're like, listen, dude, you saw me making a sphere with like hundreds of planes.
Yeah, I remember that.
And you're going like, here, let me show you something. You click sphere and it's like, ta-da.
Right.
And I go, wow, I will use spheres for the rest of my life. No, thank you.
I'm to blame. I do remember though, like when you, so here's another funny story for any, you know, GSG fans out there. When you were at DK, I hadn't gone to DK yet. I was still at Somersault and I was trying to convince you to come back, but you were loving it there. And you started to do more and more cinema stuff. I was always encouraging you. I was always like, when are you going to take over 3D there? Because you were really, you're one of those people, I'm attracted to these kinds of people, and I like to hire these kinds of people. These people that are obsessed with things until they've mastered them, and they don't stop until they reach that level. And I saw that in you, and when you started to learn Cinema 4D, I'm like, man, this guy's going to be doing some incredible stuff in a matter of months. So every time you would show me something, I'd be like, when are you going to take over 3D there, dude? Because that's like, that's what you're on track for right now. And you would always be like, no, the Maya guy's got that on lockdown. I'm like, no, dude, like, I'm telling you, you're headed in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up just doing the fun MoGraph stuff. It actually fit perfectly, because every time there was aliens and spaceships, the Maya, that they took over.
Right.
I'm like, great. And they're like, hey, we have this really cool, fun logo for you to spin around. I'm like, I'll do it. Yay.
Yep. So then when I got to DK, we overlapped for what, like a year probably?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So we overlapped. I got to DK. I switched us from Maya to 3ds Max. I hired a bunch of people. And then you started GSG and kind of started doing your own thing. But, you know, here's a question for you. If I had started, do you think Grayscale Gorilla would be around if when I came to DK, we switched to Cinema 4D?
It definitely would have been harder to leave because I feel like I would be learning in that environment with you. Like if you were there showing how to translate all your knowledge that you have into the actual software that I knew, I think maybe two things. I would have stayed a little bit longer for sure because you would have been the absolute best place to start learning Cinema 4D because you had the artistic background and you would learn cinema with me and that'd be the best place. And I would want to be there. One of the reasons I left was not just to try this like idea of a website, but also because there wasn't much else I could learn Cinema 4D wise where I was. I was learning all of it online, so right. I knew I could leave and then rely on people I knew to learn design, but not necessarily cinema. So that's a good question. I think I would have stayed longer. I still would have had this itch to build something. Mm-hmm. It just would have meant you would have been here earlier.
What I was getting at was, in a roundabout way, 3DS Max is kind of responsible for GSG.
Oh, see, I do. I'll. We should wrap this one up. But I do remember one specific lighting thing that you said to me, because I used to send Chad a lot of my scene files and renders.
Oh yeah,
and have him critique it. And this was when he was working up the street. And, you know, I didn't really have the 3D mentors around me. I had some great designers, but they didn't really understand the 3D size of things. And so I'd send my renders to Chad and have him pick it apart. And I remember really specifically the advice you gave me is still some of the advice I preach here on the site and to anybody trying to render. And I remember really specifically you're like, shadows are never black. I don't ever want to see a black shadow. And that blew my mind because I'm like, of course they are, idiot. Like, all shadows are.
Right.
And so you're just, yeah, but then you're like, all right, go find me, you know, go look at your favorite photos and go look at this. Like, shadows, you know, there's always a little fill. There's always a little bounce. There's always that. And then the same thing, you said that with the lights. You're like, lights are not pure white. There's always something going on. You want to add a little interest. And that's, I remember those true. Two things. Learning that, instantly, all my renders started to look, to me, it was like my renders started to look more like Chad. So I'm like, yay.
Well, you know, let's wrap it with this, because I think everybody needs to have that friend that is one chat away from looking at your stuff. Whether it's it doesn't even have to be just lighting or rendering or texturing. It could be modeling. It could be animation. It could be anything. You got to have that confidant that, it doesn't even have to be a mentor. It could just be somebody that you trust their aesthetic opinion. That's all it needs to be. Find this person and develop a relationship with them where you can throw each other work throughout the day if you're working at home like I am. And if they're not sitting next to you, then find that person online and say, hey, listen, can I show you this? And then just start building that rapport with them, because I can't even tell you how important that is to like have that other voice. I still do it to this day. I have that list has grown for me. I've got 3 or 4 people that I will bounce my work off of. And so you never stop doing it. That's number one. And you just got to find that person that you respect their opinion and they give you good feedback, and send them stuff for them to mark up or give you notes on. It's great. Everybody should do it.
Good advice. I like that. Well, this was fun. Another one in the can. Is that what they call it?
Yep.
In the can?
Yeah, we still use cans.
It's a can.
We have cans. Thank you, guys. We do have cans somewhere. We'll put the show in.
These eumorphics still hanging on.
Anything else our listeners can do this week other than get their butt to Half-Rez? We have some tutorials coming out this week, some updates for the motion capture. We have another motion capture tutorial coming out this week. Keep an eye out for that. And in the meantime, hope to see you at Half-Rez. If you can't make it, some of that might be recorded and up online.
We're going to try.
And yep. And anything else going on this week that people can follow us along? You know, also, if anyone wants to talk to us on Twitter, maybe we could give each other's actual Twitter names if anyone wants to say hi.
Let's just put them in the notes. It's easier to click a link.
Oh, my goodness, notes. If you want to see any of the notes, any of the links of stuff that we've mentioned in today's episode, please head on over to grayscalegorilla.com. I think it's /podcasts. You could also search Grayscale Gorilla in iTunes, where we have an actual audio podcast. Maybe you're listening to that right now. Thank you very much. And also, if you've listened this long, thank you. And also, it might mean you like us. And so in that case, please write us a review or rate us on iTunes. That helps us get the word out and for other people to find the podcast. So I appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And from all of us here at Grayscale Gorilla, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye,
bye everybody.
Bye, buddy.
See you next time.
Bye.